Solid Objects by Virginia Woolf. The only thing that moved upon the vast semicircle of the beach was one small black spot. As it came nearer to the ribs and spine of the stranded pilchard boat, it became apparent from a certain tenuity in its blackness that this spot possessed four legs. And moment by moment it became more unmistakable that it was composed of the persons of two young men. Even thus in outline against the sand, there was an unmistakable vitality in them, an indescribable vigour in the approach and withdrawal of the bodies, slight though it was, which proclaimed some violent argument issuing from the tiny mouths of the little round heads. This was corroborated on closer view by the repeated lunging of a walking stick on the right-hand side. "You mean to tell me? You actually believe?" Thus the walking stick on the right-hand side next the waves seemed to be asserting as it cut long straight stripes upon the sand. "Politics be damned!" issued clearly from the body on the left-hand side, and as these words were uttered, the mouths, noses, chins, little moustaches, tweed caps, rough boots, shooting coats and check stockings of the two speakers became clearer and clearer. The smoke of their pipes went up into the air. Nothing was so solid, so living, so hard, red, hirsute and virile as these two bodies for miles and miles of sea and sandhill. They flung themselves down by the six ribs and spine of the black pilchard boat. You know how the body seems to shake itself free from an argument and to apologise for a mood of exaltation, flinging itself down and expressing in the looseness of its attitude a readiness to take up with something new, whatever it may be, that comes next to hand. So Charles, whose stick had been slashing the beach for half a mile or so, began skimming flat pieces of slate over the water. And John, who had exclaimed, "Politics be damned," began burrowing his fingers down, down into the sand. As his hand went further and further beyond the wrist, so that he had to hitch his sleeve a little higher, his eyes lost their intensity, or rather the background of thought and experience, which gives an inscrutable depth to the eyes of grown people, disappeared, leaving only the clear, transparent surface, expressing nothing but wonder which the eyes of young children display. No doubt the act of burrowing in the sand had something to do with it. He remembered that after digging for a little, the water oozes round your fingertips. The hole then becomes a moat, a well, a spring, a secret channel to the sea. As he was choosing which of these things to make it, still working his fingers in the water, they curled round something hard, a full drop of solid matter, and gradually dislodged a large, irregular lump and brought it to the surface. When the sand coating was wiped off, a green tint appeared. It was a lump of glass, so thick as to be almost opaque. The smoothing of the sea had completely worn off any edge or shape, so that it was impossible to say whether it had been bottle, tumbler, or window pane. It was nothing but glass. It was almost a precious stone. You had only to enclose it in a rim of gold, or pierce it with a wire, and it became a jewel, part of a necklace, or a dull green light upon a finger.